NPR.
This is The Indicator from Planet Money. I'm Darian Woods.
And I'm Weilin Wong. It's been a big week in climate news following the recent signing of the Inflation Reduction Act.
Which is basically a climate bill, right?
A little masquerade act, yes. So this week, we want to check in on some environmental indicators.
That's right. For Indicators of the Week, where we share our favorite stats which shed light on the world, we've got three environmental economics indicators. So we have the Colorado River Basin, which has just sunk to a new low. We also go to the movies, where we will learn about the Amazon. And we've got a very special guest who will bring us an exclusive tidbit from the White House about valuing the invaluable.
Stay tuned.
We are joined by our NPR colleague, Nate Rott, who reports on the American West. Hello, Nate.
Hey, happy to be here.
Good to have you. And we will save you for last.
Yeah, best for last, you know. I get it.
Best for last. But first, we will start with Weilin. What do you got for us?
Well, do you remember last year, The Indicator did a whole series about the mega drought in the West and the value of water? And things have only gotten worse since then. And the impact has been catastrophic for the Colorado River, which is the source of water for tens of millions of people in seven states plus Mexico. Well, in June, federal authorities told the seven states that use the Colorado River they had 2 months to figure out how to cut their water consumption by 15 to 30%. That deadline came and went this week without an agreement. So the government ended up mandating cuts for two of the states, Arizona and Nevada. 21% less water for Arizona and 8% less for Nevada.
That's a lot less, showering.
Yeah, you know, and it's going to take like way more than just like shorter showers to account for these cuts. You know, it's going to require like pretty drastic rethinking of infrastructure and the agricultural economy. I mean, the Colorado River irrigates millions of acres of agricultural land. And when you look at farmers in California and Arizona, they're already leaving land unplanted.
Fallowed fields. Yeah, that's the technical term for an acre left undone.
Yeah, and that's like all like the fruits and vegetables that we eat in the U.S., right?
Wait a second. Why are the feds picking on Arizona and Nevada?
Well, the states that use the Colorado River are divided into upper basin and lower basin. And there are all these agreements that govern kind of who is first in line for cuts when there's a water shortage. And it happens to be Arizona and Nevada. They have what's called junior rights. But, you know, massive cuts are needed in order to stabilize the reservoirs at Lake Mead and Lake Powell. So the seven states still at the negotiating table. And meanwhile, there is $4 billion for drought resilience in the Inflation Reduction Act. But that's going to be just a part of a solution to this crisis.
And this has been a really long time coming. It's not like we're just learning that the Colorado River is over-allocated. So at some point, we all know that harsh measures are going to have to happen. All right, but let's switch gears from rivers to the forest. Darren, what is your indicator of the week?
So I thought of my indicator while I was at this documentary premiere, and it's a movie called The Territory. It's out today, actually. It's about an indigenous group in the Amazon rainforest fighting back against the clearing of their land. So here's the trailer. He's burning the Amazon.
It's intense.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah. And just to give a bit of context, the Brazilian president, Jair Bolsonaro, he did get elected on a platform that promised to open up more indigenous land for farming and mining. So there are both legal and illegal clearings happening in Brazil. But what's happening in the documentary is not legal under Brazilian law, because it shows like random farmers, like vigilante farmers, basically staking their claims. It's pretty intense. But, you know, even though that is illegal, there are very few prosecutions. And the indicator that they highlight in the documentary is that deforestation in the Brazilian Amazon is trending up. Cattle and soy farming, tin mining, rubber harvesting. This land is sought after by all kinds of industry. And last year, the rate of deforestation in the Brazilian Amazon reached a 15-year high. In fact, that year alone, they cleared forests equivalent to the size of Connecticut.
That's staggering.
Yeah. Not the kind of news you want to hear, given all the climate, you know, warnings we've got and biodiversity warnings over the last few years.
Not at all. You know, and for people like the indigenous people in the film, the Uru'ewawa, this is devastating. But the settlers will respond with arguments like the number of people on this planet is expected to reach 8 billion later this year. And as more richer people demand more beef and lamb and free-range chickens, that farmland has to come from somewhere. That's the argument. But, you know, I saw a chart the other day that gave me pause on that narrative of, you know, needing more farmland. Because overall land use for farming has actually stopped growing across the globe.
Huh.
And this chart was collated by Our World and Data, and it showed that, according to the UN and others, the amount of land used for agriculture peaked somewhere between the 1990s and the early 2000s.
Huh, so it's gone down since then?
It's kind of plateauing a little bit. And there's been a few reasons for this. There's been a shift in diets towards animals that are more intensively farmed indoors. And we're getting better at producing more food on less land. But that is kind of cold comfort for people like Bitate Uruwewa from the film. Bitate lives in Brazil, where agricultural land use is increasing. And he spoke after the screening that I saw. He's saying what his people suffer, all indigenous people in Brazil suffer as well. And given the Amazon rainforest's historical role as a carbon sink, this affects us all too.
Yeah, bummer.
Yeah, but they're fighting back. I mean, that's the kind of sliver of hope that I see in this documentary.
Nate, I hear you have another sliver of hope for us. That's also a little scoop.
Yeah, let's call it a scooplet, right? And it is a sliver of hope. My indicator is related to both of the topics you guys were talking about, which is the link between nature and the economy. So obviously, we know those two things are related, right? But when we talk about the global or national economy, we talk about GDP, job figures, how often do you hear the phrase natural capital?
Not very frequently. You're talking like natural resources, you know, like equivalent to wealth.
Exactly, right? Like it's basically talking about nature like you would talk about a factory, right? Or a road. And we don't really talk about it because we don't do a good job of tracking it. Obviously, right, we track oil and gas. We track National Park Service revenue. But we've never done a thorough accounting of what other natural resources like water quality or the air we breathe, what kind of economic gain that is worth, right? Plus, how those things are changing over time. How are we using them? So an example I like to think of is like a wetland on the coast, right? You could pave it. You could charge $20 a head for people to come park so they can sunbathe for the day. It's pretty easy to do the math, figure out what the value of that is, but what is the value of that wetland as a shield from coastal storms or as a drain for floodwaters? You know, looking at the ecosystem services that wetland provides.
Yeah, I don't think the calculator in my iPhone is capable of handling this task.
I doubt it. And that's because environmental economists have been trying to crunch numbers on this for years, but it's really hard. For example, you know, how do you judge the value of a tree left standing in a forest or like a park? Urban trees save people billions of dollars in heating and cooling. We know that. But how do you calculate the value of a tree in a forest? It's way harder.
That is totally true. I have a tree in my backyard, and I thank it for the shade it provides in hot days like today.
Yeah, so the White House is releasing a draft strategy to try to bridge the gap between economists and conservationists. They're trying to create the country's first government-wide natural capital accounts, which will basically assign values to nature, allowing them to be part of the broader economic conversation.
Right. And what's the timeline?
It's not imminent. Over the next 15 years.
About the length of time it takes for a tree to grow.
Exactly, right. There's a lot of stuff to consider here, a lot of bean counting, so it's a big job. Yeah. I will also say that they're asking for public comment.
Are there other countries that we're looking to as a model?
Yeah, the private sector, the World Bank, some countries. I mean, but when the U.S. does something, it really matters. We're the largest economy in the world, so it sends a huge signal to everyone else that this is something we ought to be thinking about.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Nate. That's been a fascinating discussion.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. This was great.
Yeah, come back before 15 years, though.
Okay, yeah.
This episode was produced by Nikki Willett with engineering from Robert Rodriguez. It was fact-checked by Catherine Yang. Viet Lai is our senior producer. Kate Concannon edits the show, and The Indicator is a production of NPR.